listening experience. Soundscapes and classical remixes from Unclassified. Brooding electronics on Late Junction. There's late night improvisation on Freeness and the New Music Show. And an all-night edition of Night Tracks with immersive live music and a traditional Indian dawn rag. The After Dark Festival on Radio 3 and BBC Sounds. Starts with Free Thinking on Wednesday night at 10.
Next, Private Passions, and Michael Barclay's guest is the photographer Missan Harriman.
Missan Harriman didn't become a photographer till 5 years ago, when his wife gave him a camera for his 40th birthday. Since then, he's become world famous, photographing celebrities like Tom Cruise, Cate Blanchett, and Meghan Markle. His was the romantic black and white photograph of Harry and Meghan announcing her pregnancy last year. Alongside these high-profile celebrity commissions, he's also become a photographer known for documenting Extinction Rebellion, anti-Trump protests, and the Black Lives Matter movement. In 2020, he became the first black person in the 104-year history of British Vogue to shoot the cover of its prestigious September issue. Last year, he became the new chair of the South Bank Arts Centre. It's really an amazing story, Missan, from the first camera to the cover of Vogue in just 4 years. Do you think your wife, Camilla, knew what she was unleashing when she gave you that camera as a birthday present?
No, and thank you for having me. And I remember thinking, you know, I'm turning 40, and like many men and women, what have I done with my life? And she was sick and tired of me talking about the great art of others. And she goes, I'm going to get you this tool for storytelling, and we're going to go to India, to Rajasthan, and let's see what happens.
Well, we'll be exploring the quite extraordinary impact of that camera over the next hour. But music first. And it's very clear from your playlist that you're a real film buff, a visual arts person. Indeed, I'd say you've come to music through your eyes as much as your ears. And we've got soundtracks by John Williams, John Barry, William Walton. So do you think it is through movies that you actually have discovered music?
It's interesting. I think music has always been part of, you know, born in Nigeria, music is a big part of the culture in Nigeria. And I think the emotive aspect of what song can do was greatly amplified in film for me. So yes and no. I think I always knew music, but I didn't quite realize what it could do, how it could shape a story and build a narrative that could structure a whole film.
And we're going to start with a piece that I think takes you back to your childhood, because it really emerged when you saw the film Ghost.
You know, the kids today, they won't remember how big a cultural moment Ghost was. But I remember it was the film that everyone was talking about in 1990. You know, the late, great Patrick Swayze, of course, Demi Moore and Whoopi Goldberg. And On Chain Melody was originally a huge hit by the Righteous Brothers that became a hit again when the film Ghost came out. But this is the instrumental version by Maurice Jarre. And it reminds me of what Ghost, the film, is really about, and that is the impossibility to kill love.
So the music is still important to you now for emotional reasons?
Absolutely. This specific version of On Chain Melody has been very important for my mental health journey.
Thank you.
just listening to that, you know, in real time, I swear, I take flight. You know, I close my eyes and it felt like a celestial experience, you know, listening to that, almost as if it confirmed that there is something beyond us. And I wasn't afraid to not understand that next place. And it's extraordinary that that piece could do that to me.
Unchained Melody, as orchestrated by Maurice Jarre, from his soundtrack to the 1990 film Ghost. Your childhood was important in the selection of that music, as you said, and you were born in Nigeria, Miss Ann Harriman, as you also mentioned, but moved to England, I think, when you were about five, sent to boarding school here. And what was that like for you?
You know, I came to England in the 80s as a little boy and went straight to boarding school. I always describe it as Harry Potter without the magic. And it was a lot. It was a big change for someone so little. As a black boy in very white spaces, you know, it was difficult to feel centered until I discovered music and film and poetry and books. And I quickly became the kid that everyone would ask what song they should listen to, what book they should read, and what film they should watch. And that helped me find my identity, even as a little person.
Your brothers and sisters were also in this country, and I think your mother moved to Surrey to bring up the children, but I get the impression that the isolation that you've just spoken of was particular for you.
Yeah, it was. I mean, you know, I'm now described as neurodiverse, you know, but in the 80s, you know, I was really struggling at school. So my school reports are very, very bad. And I was ashamed for a big part of my life, of my mind. The very thing that has made me achieve what I've achieved for most of my life made me feel different, made me feel othered. And I think that definitely made me very isolated as a young boy.
And I suppose dyslexia didn't help.
No, it didn't. And yes, it did. That is my superpower. Something that I always thought was my Achilles heel has been the very, you know, the very pillar of the man that I was always supposed to be. So many of the people that have brought light into this world, that have shaped this world culturally, have different and beautiful minds.
I can't help feeling that maybe you identified with the young boy who is at the centre of the next film that you are going to access. It's John Williams' soundtrack for Empire of the Sun.
What can I say about this film? Spielberg, you know, doing what he's done repeatedly in an extraordinary career. And John Williams is as close to God to me as anyone living. I don't think there is anyone that has been nominated for more Oscars, and his body of work is truly staggering. Empire of the Sun stars are very young. A lot of people don't fully realize, you know, it's 1988, and the lead, the person that holds the film together, is a very young Christian Bale. And seeing war through the eyes of a boy, and I wasn't far away from the age of the boy in this film, was a life-changing moment for me. You know, I saw the evil that men do in a way that my mind could actually assimilate, and I'd never experienced anything like that until I had seen Empire of the Sun. And the song Sogan is choral in nature, and it, you know, it reminded me of choir practice at school, and it's never left me, never left me.
It's an old Welsh lullaby, much loved in Wales. Mother rocks you, humming lowly. Close your eyes now, go to sleep.
Thank you.
James Rainbird was performing Sewer Gun in an arrangement by John Williams from his soundtrack to the 1987 film Empire of the Sun, based, of course, on the J.G. Ballard book. John McCarthy was directing the Ambrosian Junior Choir. Back in Nigeria, Misan, your father was a very successful businessman in property, oil, gas, rubber. He'd been educated in Britain too, going to Cambridge. So what were his expectations of you in terms of what you would or should do with your life?
I think it's very similar to many parents. You know, my father was born in a colonial Nigeria, went through the independence of our nation, and had a huge affinity to everything British, but also had a huge sense of pride of his own identity, of being Ishekiri from the Niger Delta. So I think he realized that we were lucky to have the privilege of getting the best education in the world. But he also expected us to do the sorts of jobs, businesses that he knew. And that was not in the creative field, you know. So finance, oil and gas, you know, maybe a lawyer or doctor.
How did you resist that pressure? Or in fact, did you?
The answer is I didn't resist it. I did what many young adults do, and try to be the person that society and or your family have programmed you to be. But luckily for me, because of my love of art and culture, the whisper of my inner child. My wife calls me a hypersensitive. You know, I burst into tears looking at pictures, paintings, listening to songs. So I never buried that part of me, even when trying to be a more conventional version of myself. And the final sort of realization was when I was able to hold a camera and I emerged as my true self.
So you moved from being a headhunter in the city to being a photographer. And I can't help wondering whether there wasn't always something else for you out there lurking beneath the surface, another self that finally was released when you started taking photographs.
Yes, but I wouldn't have been able to do it without Camilla, the woman that allowed me to face my demons and realize that I could walk through the door of darkness and see light. You know, I struggle, like many people that will be listening to this, with self-doubt and imposter syndrome. And she saw past that and held me steady so we could look toward the horizon together.
Mm. Music next by that great film composer, John Barry, from Dances with Wolves, a film which was released when you were, I think, just about 13. And this had quite a political impact on you.
It did. You know, like many people, you know, cowboys and Indians were some of the earliest moving images I ever saw. And looking back now, I realize how profoundly brave Kevin Costner was to bring Dances with Wolves to the big screen, because it showcased an America that I had never been shown. It showed with so much grace and humility the forgotten cultures of the original people of the land. And if you rewatch Dances with Wolves, the Yankees, the white immigrant Americans, are really quite monstrous in how they treat the local communities. And I really was shocked by how unapologetic that vision by Kevin Costner was. And it led me on a journey of unlearning some of the history that I thought was a truth and clearly wasn't. That was what Dances with Wolves really did for me.
John Barry's soundtrack to Kevin Costner's 1990 film, Dances with Wolves, and that was the loss of the journal. I love the way Barry does certain things that identify him, those sort of bass trombone sounds, which he has all through the James Bond films, of course.
The two Johns. I mean, John Barry and John Williams, honestly, that I could pretty much just bathe in their genius for the rest of my natural life.
In the summer of 2020, Misan, hundreds of thousands of people took to the streets as part of the Black Lives Matter protest. You, at the time, were comfortably settled in Surrey, married to a banker, and yet those protests really obviously spoke to you. Why did you decide to go out with your camera?
Because after the murder of George Floyd, I ran out of tears. My well of tears had run dry, and I took my camera and I went to the streets of London, not knowing whether I would see five people or 5,000, and began to document with my lens the greatest showcase of solidarity, allyship, and pain, raw pain, that this country has ever shown in my lifetime, at least.
Some of those images really went viral on social media. Tell us a little bit about how that happened and the impact it had on you.
Well, the thing about just going out there and doing something is you never know what will come of it. And I took these pictures and did what I always do. I put them on my Instagram. I think I had like 2,000-3,000 followers in those days. And I remember going to sleep one night and opening my phone up in the morning, and I couldn't even get into Instagram or WhatsApp because I was getting so many notifications. And what had happened is that the son of Martin Luther King himself had used one of my images to make a big statement about race relations globally. And of course, that set me on a path where many people started discovering my lens and my imagery. And of course, the editor-in-chief, Edward Enningfor of British Vogue, then saw my images and took the historic step to commission me to shoot the cover of British Vogue's September issue.
For those that didn't see that September issue of Vogue, could you just describe the picture you took for it?
Yes. So Edward Enningfor, the editor of British Vogue, commissioned me to shoot the main cover and the majority of the activists that were in the fold-out. So in a very short period of time, I was lucky enough to shoot many icons, including Marcus Rashford himself and Adwoa Eboa for the main cover. And it was in black and white, which very rarely do you get any covers in black and white, let alone the September issue. So it was a great, great honour. And it's actually, you know, the September issue before that was taken by one of my idols, the last cover that Peter Lindbergh did, done in partnership with my dear friend Meghan Markle. So it feels like everything went full circle.
And of course, we should say that the September issue is special because it is the great fashion month, isn't it?
It is a great fashion Bible, yeah. The September issue is beyond a big deal.
Once things become enormous movements, there are inevitably investigations, and the finances of some of the founders of the Black Lives Matter movement currently under investigation. And some of the original aims were really quite radical, such as defunding the police, for example. How far do you go in support of the BLM campaign?
It's really interesting because, for me, my photography has always been in support of the anti-racist movement, always. And people will label that BLM or far left, but I support the group of people that I photographed, people of all colours, all ages, that have decided that the greatest stain of modern man, which is institutional racism, is something that they won't stand for.
It sounds, Misan, as though despite the privilege that you had as a child, you also had a great deal of racism experience, that people were unpleasant to you. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Absolutely. Privilege doesn't protect you from being othered. And certainly I was othered repeatedly and still am, you know, whether it's being treated as if I'm part of a petting zoo at school with both teachers and students playing with my hair without any permission from myself, making jokes about my lips or my nose or what they presume life is like in Nigeria. And more up to date. And this is a great example, is the reality of leaving. I could leave this studio that I'm in right now and put my hand out for a Hackney carriage, and my record is 13. I've had 13 Hackney carriage cabs drive past me in the heart of Mayfair, wearing a suit. Some of them even slow down to look at me. And my wife, who is white, when we first started dating, I remember going to the theatre with her and saying, listen, you need to try and get a cab. And she goes, don't be silly. And I went out there and she saw two or three drive past. And of course, when she did, they screeched to a halt. And that was the beginning of her journey of what it means to be othered. And many people that I know who are white certainly have not experienced that.
Music next, which really does conjure up the horror of the Second World War. Elegy for Dunkirk by Dario Marianelli from the film Atonement. You think this is one of the greatest scenes in cinema, don't you?
I can't watch it without weeping. And I mean this every single time. I can be on a train and I'll be in tears. Within it, I love a good hymn, and it has my favourite hymn, you know, Dear Lord and Father of Mankind. It's just an extraordinary piece of art.
Thank you. Benjamin Wolfish conducting the English Chamber Orchestra in Elegy for Dunkirk from Dario Marianelli's soundtrack to the 2007 film Atonement. The cellist was Caroline Dale. Of course, you photographed some of the stars of Atonement, I think, Miss Anne, because alongside the politically committed work, you're also, as we've mentioned, well known as a photographer of famous people like Meghan Markle, Tom Cruise, Julia Roberts, Giorgio Armani, Rihanna, Cate Blanchett. I could go on. It's a long list. I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about the process of taking these photographs, because those sort of people are always surrounded by a retinue of PR people, and you have to somehow get them to drop their guard, don't you? So they're speaking just to you and your camera.
Fundamentally, my lens is an intimate lens. I never use flash. I always try and work with available light. I don't like retouching my images. So it really is the honesty of the subject and the compositional eye that I've been gifted with.
So do you try to create a link through chatting, jokes?
I would say yes. I mean, you have limited time with some of these actors and singers. But with many of the photographs I've taken, 90% of the time I have with the subject is talking. My lens is lifted to my eye really at the end of the time that I have with them. And I think that makes a big difference.
Given the importance of media today, do some of them ask you to make them thinner, look younger? Does my bum look big in this?
No, because I make sure that I let them know how beautiful they are.
Music now, which I think you sometimes play to your friends at dinner parties. It's William Walton's music for Henry V, the 1944 film starring Laurence Olivier. In fact, you make them listen to it.
I am a bore at dinner parties because I force people to, you know, because I don't know what they do in the rest of their lives. So if I have their attention, anything that's made me feel something, I try and give it to them as a gift. I mean, this is well before many of us were born. So it feels that much more precious to me to let people know about the great art that came before our time. To those listening, if you want to experience something really magical, wait till summer comes and listen to that piece. Listen to it while sat under a willow tree. I promise you, you will experience magic.
The Suite from Henry V, music from William Walton's soundtrack to the 1944 film, in an arrangement by Muir Mathieson. We heard the Philharmonia Orchestra, conducted by the composer. And all the details of the music choices of my guest today, Miss Anne Harriman, are on the Private Passions webpage. So when you're under your willow tree, you can go to BBC Sounds, get this programme, and discover hundreds of others from the past. Like all of us, Miss Anne, you've had to find new ways of working during the pandemic, and you've discovered a way of doing what I think you call distanced photography.
Yeah, virtual shooting. My most well-known virtual shoot is the portrait I took of Prince Harry and Meghan Markle announcing their pregnancy. It's a very joyous image. The technology allows you to take over a phone or an iPad and they can hear my voice, and I can still press a shutter and compose with ease. It's extraordinary what you can do with technology.
They weren't actually under a willow tree, but they were lying outside in a meadow, weren't they, Harry and Meghan, when you took the photograph of them?
Yeah, they were lost in their love, at home, in their garden, comfortable, celebrating new joy, new life, the fortitude of hoping for light in life after such a loss that they went through with a miscarriage. So it really was a particularly joyous image to celebrate life itself.
Well, of course, we've been able to carry on through the pandemic, and I think many listeners have been grateful for it, thanks to technology. I mean, even now, you're in a studio about 2 or 3 miles away from where I am at this moment, and it means we can still talk quite intimately about the things that you love, and music does promote that sort of intimacy too when you're talking about it, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, COVID has changed everything. And we've all had to figure out how to do it. I will say, this era of COVID, if we haven't had a moment of deep reflection, then we're never going to. And many of us have made strong choices on who we are and how we choose to work. And the technology has helped us to be able to make those choices.
Well, we're going to move on to another track. And this is from the 2004 film Crash, about racial and social tensions in Los Angeles. It's Sense of Touch by the American composer Mark Isham. And again, actually, the lyrics are based on an old Welsh folk tune. Set the scene for us, will you please? Why is this music so moving in this particular film, in this particular scene?
This scene is still one of the most overwhelmingly powerful scenes that I've ever seen. You know, the film opens with Tandiwe Newton being abused by the very person that's supposed to protect her, a policeman played by Matt Dillon. And the scene that we're talking about now is where she's in an overturned car after crashing. And as Matt Dillon runs into this overturned car, he sees that the woman that he has to save is the very woman that he abused at the beginning of the film. And the score that runs through this is just so, so powerful. And Lisa Lan just takes the whole scene into a whole other place. I love it.
Under the sun, you listen.
We are all crashing into each other all the time, whether it's our differences in the gods we worship, the tone of our skin, or our, just the fear of change. And that film, again, is a cautionary tale about hopefully us taking time to step back. And this quote from Rumi I use a lot, and it goes, "Raise your words, not your voice. It is rain that grows flowers, not thunder." And I really hope many of us can use those words to lead our lives.
We heard Sense of Touch by Mark Isham with the vocalist Carol Ensley from the soundtrack to the 2004 film Crash. Apart from your high-voltage political protests and things like that, you actually have started a more local, low-key project where you photograph the people where you live in Surrey. And I wonder what you discovered by turning down the volume, as it were, just to see these people going about their everyday business.
It's funny because photographing the milkman, the local bakery that stayed open even at the height of lockdown to support the community, the postman who's a superhero in my eyes, all these people that we would ignore in our daily pre-COVID lives became people that reminded us of what the meaning of community is. Speaking to my neighbours in ways that we never have, beyond the hi-bye on the way to get the train. And my lens captured that.
Now, you had another lockdown project, a baby. How has that changed your life?
Lyra arrived, I think, a month into lockdown. She focused me on love. And she's running around now as a 1.5-year-old, and I can't wait to sit down with her and tell her how she planted the seeds of change into her daddy.
Well, she's going to be a lucky little girl because over her lifetime, I think thanks to you, she's going to experience a great deal of art and music.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, you know, the films, the music, the art itself, both in the museums and the art that her father's made are all gifts for her to decide who she wants to be in the world.
And of course, with your new job as chair of the South Bank Centre in London, you have responsibility for concert halls, art galleries, cinema screens, and the largest poetry library in Britain. In fact, it's Europe's largest art centre.
Yeah.
So no pressure there. Can you give us a sense of your vision for it, what you would like to bring to it?
To amplify its pillars. Its pillars were spot on, you know, the Festival of Britain. The tonic for the nation, you know, a Britain that was still not fully recovered from the scars of war. And to have a space that availed art to all, regardless of their social station, is needed more than ever before, frankly speaking. This is the first time since the Second World War where we have all been through collective trauma, the world, because of COVID. And none of us are okay.
And I don't suppose the concert halls will be a stranger to film music.
No. I mean, you know, we have Hans Zimmer and many, you know, Zimmer versus Williams and, you know, James Bond scores. There's a lot that we do with our many orchestras in the Royal Festival Hall.
Well, true to the private passions you've revealed over the last hour, your final piece also comes from the cinema. It's from Howard Shore's music for The Lord of the Rings. And it's really just the end of this track that you particularly would like us to listen to.
Yeah, I mean, the bridge over Khazad Dûm is loved by all sort of Lord of the Rings fans. It's quite a long piece. But there is a moment in it where everything gets still and quiet and it becomes a little bit more choral. And that is the scene where Gandalf looks at Frodo Baggins and Samwise Gamgee and says, "Fly, you fools." And he falls into a seemingly endless abyss.
Exit Gandalf. And I'm afraid, exit Missan and exit Michael, because we've come to the end of our hour. So it only remains for me to thank you very much, Missan Harriman, for being my guest on Private Passions.
Thank you very much.
Bridge of Khazad Dûm from Howard Shore's soundtrack to The Fellowship of the Ring. And that was the final choice of Michael Barclay's guest on Private Passions today, Misan Harriman. The episode was produced by Elizabeth Burke, and it was a Loftus media production for BBC Radio 3. And you can find details of all today's music, if you search for Private Passions, on BBC Sounds, where you can also download hundreds of previous editions. The programme returns next Sunday at noon, when Michael Barclay will be in conversation with Richard Holloway. This is BBC Radio 3, 90-93 FM, digital radio, and on BBC Sounds. We're off to the Wigmore Hall in a couple of minutes for today's lunchtime concert. Martin Handley will be introducing the pianist Ingrid Flitter and a programme of pieces by Haydn and Schumann. First at 1 o'clock, the news. This is Andrew Crawford. Ukrainian officials say an art school in Mariupol, where around 400 people were sheltering, has been completely destroyed by Russian forces. Around 300,000 civilians remain trapped in the city. Officials there have claimed that thousands of residents have been taken against their will and transported to Russia. Ukraine's president said Russia's bombardment of Mariupol would be remembered as a terror for centuries to come. Volodymyr Zelensky has also ordered 11 pro-Kremlin parties to be suspended for as long as martial law is in place, warning that those collaborating with Moscow would face a firm response. Pope Francis has used his Sunday blessing to condemn the conflict in Ukraine as an unjustified, senseless massacre. He called on leaders to stop this repugnant war. Leading Conservatives have dismissed criticism of Boris Johnson after he appeared to liken the war in Ukraine to the Brexit vote. He told the Tory party spring conference in Blackpool yesterday that the instinct of British people, like that of the Ukrainians, was to choose freedom. Opposition parties have called for an apology. The Chancellor has promised to help people deal with the rising cost of living ahead of his spring statement on Wednesday. However, Rishi Sunak warned that sanctions imposed on Russia were not cost-free. He's facing calls, including from more than 50 Conservative backbench MPs, to cut fuel duty. Labour has backed that proposal, but urged the Treasury to do more. Six people have been killed in southern Belgium after a car was driven at high speed into a crowd of dozens of people who were waiting for a carnival to start at 5 o'clock this morning. Police believe it was an accident and say they're not treating it as terrorism. Police have named a 19-year-old student who was found dead in university halls in the Clerkenwell area of London. Sabita Thanwani, who's believed to have been studying at City University of London, was discovered with serious neck injuries early yesterday morning. Detectives are trying to trace 22-year-old Maha Marouf, who's believed to have been in a relationship with her. Firefighters say they suspect a large blaze on marshland on the Wirral was started deliberately. Crews took around 5.5 hours to put out the flames in Parkgate in Cheshire yesterday, and some nearby homes had to be evacuated. And the weather, fine and dry this afternoon with some lengthy periods of spring sunshine. Eastern areas will see some patchy cloud with the sunshine possibly turning rather hazy. Cloud will build into southwest England and Northern Ireland, bringing a slim chance of drizzle.
Hiya, I'm Linton Stevens with a brand new series of Classical Fix. Honest discussions with guests who aren't into classical music yet.
I think I always looked at classical music as like something difficult.
Absolute, ginormous, gaping black hole of lack of knowledge when it comes to classical music.
Each week, I put together a new playlist and see what they think.
That almost felt like a rock hook. That could have been like a guitar solo.
At this point, you expect David Attenborough's voice, don't you?